When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Man there trying to stop Drogba from getting himself into further trouble.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maldano smokes and Argentina the lead, the England players protesting to the referee.
De halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
So hello and welcome to the first episode of the Scoreless Thriller podcast. My name is Alex and I'm joined as always by Leon. Leon, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Leon. I'm happy to be here. Just watched this beautiful match with Alex and very happy to talk about it. Very, very happy.
So I guess the best place to start would be, was this the worst football match you have ever watched?
It was not. I feel like the first half was too good a half to be the worst match I've ever watched. But it had its length towards the end of the match.
Yeah, I feel like there's a little bit of like confirmation bias with it, right? And a kind of confirmation bias kind of goes both ways, that you've heard that this is the worst game you've ever seen. So then you kind of see stuff at the start where it's like, oh, they actually were trying. It wasn't like that episode of The Simpsons where they pass it around the center circle for half an hour and then there's the fight. But then obviously, the first half was felt like it, what they actually were trying.
But they were trying, I think. I mean, they scored and everything. But yeah. It's like, you know that it's called the disgrace of Gijón.
And Gijón.
Gijón. We tried to pronounce it correctly.
Sorry.
I'm so sorry. We did it wrong. literally just looked it up on the internet. But you go there into watching the match with a certain mindset, which makes you see certain stuff. That's for sure, yeah.
Okay. So I think we should probably start with why we're talking about this game, or like a bit of background to this football match. So it was in the 1982 World Cup between West Germany and Austria. And maybe, Leon, you'd like to expand a little bit on why, what kind of the circumstances led to this situation.
That's a big task. but I guess one has to start with a group, which is West Germany, Austria, Algeria and Chile. And we can kind of leave out Chile here a bit, because they weren't super important.
Yeah. They lost all the games, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Lost all
Sorry,
the games. So not relevant. But a team that was very relevant but didn't play that day was Algeria. And it was their first time participating in a World Cup. And so they were extremely excited, and their first match was against the Germans. And the Germans were kind of taking it very easy and being a bit cocky about them winning. But actually they lost. And with Austria winning against Algeria and Germany winning the second game, what happened was that there was this scenario where Germany and Austria had to fight it out in the last match of the group. And if Germany wins, then Germany will proceed, will go on to the next round. But if they win by more than
three
goals, then actually Austria's out and Algeria proceeds. So it's a very delicate situation, and I don't know whether you can explain it.
But let's rewind a little bit. Like, you described, you said Germany were a little bit arrogant. I think a little bit might be
a little bit of an understatement. No, it definitely was. I think this is also very important to understand why it's called the disgrace of Gijón, because it was not just the match, but it was also the atmosphere that was created around it. One of the players of the German team said before the match of against Algeria that they will dedicate the 8th goal to their wives and then the ninth goal to their dogs. So they were trash talking quite a bit, and they were not trash talking to one of the established teams of football World Cup history, but actually towards this newbie Algeria who participated for the first time. And so that was also not the most charismatic approach.
And there was this kind of culture around sort of dismissing the African teams in the World Cup. In 78, Germany drew with Tunisia, even though they sort of said similar things about them beforehand. And had
they lost, they would have been out.
And had they lost that game, they would have been out. And also, in this case, in 1982, the West Germany coach decided not to show the Germany team any kind of footage of Algeria because he was worried that they would laugh at him.
He was scared that the team wouldn't pay attention,
taking them seriously. And then, but in the end, they ended up losing to Algeria. And as a result, kind of the kind of atmosphere of this kind of underdog who was superseding these kind of major European powers. And then how in the third game, these two European powers kind of collaborated and kind of came to this kind of like major sort of disgraceful kind of situation, which ended up with them collaborating to exclude Algeria from the World Cup.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to take into account that in this kind of World Cup environment, what you want is the underdog to win and to actually have a chance at beating these guys. So, of course, a lot of people were siding with the Algerians and hoping for them to actually make this happen, to go to the next round. So, yeah, that was kind of the background of their match.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now that we've sort of spoken a bit about the background, let's probably go exactly into the match itself. So after 11 minutes, West Germany take the lead through this very lovely move down the left-hand side and cross down into the middle.
Yeah, they bring it in from the side and then they manage to score from there. Horst Rubesch scores. Actually played for my hometown club, Hamburg.
Hamburg superstar.
Back in the days where we were still managing to win actually some titles. But yeah, they score. And it was a very active beginning of the match. Like, they were fighting it out, lots of tackles, very physical, but with Germany having kind of the upper hand, and then they managed to convert it and score from that. So, at that stage, I don't think anyone actually thought that this match will develop in the way it does.
Mm. It is kind of remarkable watching a game of football from, like, 40 years ago. It is just, it's kind of, in some ways, it's just, like, bears zero resemblance as to how you kind of imagine football today, in that when teams attack, you don't really see the kind of patterns, or you look for the kind of shapes or the kind of
the
strategy of how they kind of attack.
Yeah.
But then in this kind of like, when you watch something from 1982, the way they attack is kind of ad hoc, and there's just the kind of like, oh, someone will play a nice little 1-2.
Yeah, it's very random and all over the place. People running into one another, and it is special to go back in time and watch these kind of matches. Yeah.
And when you watch also the kind of pressing, like the other team having the ball, the way they kind of like, there's no like unified kind of approach or where the team kind of works together to press the other team. It's just kind of one-off runners running in, and then you'll see, I mean, probably saw about probably like 5 red cards tackles by modern standards in the first half.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know whether it's like the lack of athleticism, because probably they were super fit and they had their strategy set out, but in comparison to nowadays, there's a lack of strategy and a lack of maybe focus. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's now to kind of move on. So
and the back pass rule.
You could make just one podcast just talking about the back pass rule, but it is kind of remarkable how one kind of simple rule just like changes the entire like format or how a game kind of looks. So I mean, when you watch a game which does not have the back pass rule, you just kind of it's remarkable how easy sometimes it is for defenders. You think, oh, he's being pressed into a corner. What's he going to do? But he can just like play it back to the goalkeeper.
Yeah. Maybe explain for 1 second like the back pass rule.
Okay, so as in the back pass rule is that you can actually pass it back to the goalkeeper and pick it up, which was changed, I think, for the 1994 World Cup, after which the goalkeeper has to kind of play it with his feet. And so when you watch this game where the back pass rule doesn't exist, you can, there were some cases where it was kind of almost kind of remarkable where someone had it like on the halfway line, was dribbling forward, had no like real pressure on him, and kind of just would turn around and play it back to the goalkeeper, who would pick it up and then just pump it forward again.
Yeah.
There's like, I think there's a famous clip, I think, of Liverpool in the 80s, and Graeme Souness is a, where he's there, I think they're winning the game and kind of time wasting, and he's like, he's halfway to the other team's box and then just turns around and punts it back to his goalkeeper, who can like pick it up and like waste like a minute just bouncing around his box. It's kind of, it's remarkable how no one sort of thought that maybe if we change this rule it will
because now it seems so obvious, right? It looks wrong when they do it, like when you look at it from the perspective nowadays.
It's like watching a game which doesn't have like an offside rule or something.
So it's pretty plain that this is not the way it's supposed to be played, but back in the days that's what they did, and that's what they did a lot of times in this match. And every time like a little guy in my brain screamed like, no, this can't be true, it's wrong. But yeah, this just on the side.
Yeah, this is on the side. But like we said, the first half was, I mean, pretty reasonable game of football. A bit of counter-attacking. Mostly West Germany. I feel like Austria were very much the weaker side in this affair.
And
I
feel this has to be taken into consideration when you look at how the game develops later on, right? Because you could feel that Germany was building up a lot of pressure and might actually be able to score later on. A couple of more goals. So this 3 more goals that need to be scored in order for Austria to drop out.
Yeah.
This was not like the most unlikely event when you look at the first couple of minutes. Like this could have happened.
Yeah.
Like. So, yeah.
But then, so like we said, the first half goes along reasonably. Then at halftime, we watched the game on this website where we found this Spanish recording of the game. And obviously it was someone's sort of VHS tape, which it's, because we halfway through the first half, it started jumping around the screen, but it doesn't show it in our recording. But apparently, at halftime, you can see 2 players, one from Austria and one from West Germany, go off the pitch arm in arm, and they're clearly having a chat about the circumstances of this situation.
It does seem highly unusual, right?
Mm.
That you would go out hand in hand, arm in arm, rather. And discuss stuff. I don't know. Maybe it happens every now and then, but yeah, not in a World Cup match, I guess. Especially if the stakes are so high, right?
Yeah.
Both teams could still drop out. So yeah, there's a lot to play for.
Mm. That does remind me of an Arsenal player, Andre Santos, got in a lot of trouble because he was having a nightmare game against Manchester United.
Yeah.
This is the first time Robin van Persie had played against Man United since he left Arsenal summer. And he was having a turret game, but anyway, he decided, and this is a very kind of cultural thing, that he decided it was okay to like swap shirts with Van Persie at halftime, because it's very like the culture around sort of your opposition, I feel, is very kind of different as opposed to sort of like the English traditional one where, you know, it's a rivalry game,
yeah,
you have to hate his guts kind of thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, Van Persie had like played in England long enough to kind of know how this would appear with this left back who was being torn to shreds. It was a little, Andre Santos always looked a little bit overweight to be a professional footballer and struggling to get back. And at halftime, Van Persie thought it was a good idea that they could swap shirts on the pitch halfway as they were going off. And Andre Santos's Arsenal career never really recovered from this point. So anyway, the second half begins, and it's not noticeably different from the first half, except the crowd starts to play in the part.
That's what I thought. Like, the crowd noticed before I did, I felt. Because suddenly there was some booing, and people were agitated about something. But both teams, at least at the start, are both trying. They're fighting over the ball and stuff, but without there being any clear chances. But yeah, then it just continues down their path, I feel.
So we should probably comment on what they actually start chanting. So I think initially, I'm not sure what the first chant we heard. I think it was fuera, fuera. Out.
Get them out.
You know, get these betrayers of football off the pitch.
Oh yeah, because 1982, it took place in Spain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Gijón, northern coast of Spain.
Yeah.
Just for background.
Mm-hmm. And then the crowd chants goes from that, and then you can audibly hear Algeria a little bit later on.
Yeah.
A couple times.
Yeah.
And then apparently the chant was... I'm not sure what it was. In Spanish, it was...
I think in English, was them... Let them kiss?
Yeah, let them kiss.
Yeah. Let them kiss. both of the conspirators.
Yes. And I have always... I couldn't quite hear the let them kiss, but I want to know how that sounds in a chant.
No, but it was very impressive.
Yeah, que se besen. So, let them kiss. Let them kiss.
Yeah. But in general, like, the crowd was very, very agitated, and you could feel that they were not happy with the way the match was going. I was quite surprised that the teams... I felt like the more the crowd was booing and chanting away, the teams actually started to play less for another goal. So
yeah.
it did not lead to maybe what the crowd wanted. Mm. To initiate that both teams would take up the match again and actually try to score, but rather led to both teams being less active and less aggressive, I felt.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit of the players sort of kind of, as the kind of thing progresses and it gets closer to the, as it gets closer to the final whistle, they're very much more aware of the kind of situation and, like, you know.
And just play it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it could work the other way around, right? That they eventually notice that the crowd is so not happy, and that maybe they actually should try harder in order not to aggravate or make unhappy the global football community, which is what they did in the end, which is what happened.
Very much.
Yeah. So this was kind of they could have known on the pitch that this was not going in the right direction, at least from their publicity
standpoint. I'm trying to think of points in the game, you know, like attacks or thorough moments of the second half, and there isn't much. You know, there's like a couple shots which fly, like 20 yards over the bar, and there's a little bit of.
Yeah,
a few like dribbles. The number 7 for Austria.
So yeah, Schachner. I read that he was trying so hard I couldn't actually see it where we watched the match. But maybe the quality was just too bad. That might be.
Apparently, he
was trying really hard, and actually, he later on stated that he had no clue that team members of both teams had been talking during halftime, which might be an indicator for some collusion actually.
That does also
place.
Sound quite a lot like something you would say, though, right?
Like something you would. Why not? I mean, but you would not. I mean, you don't want to give your teammates away, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of like.
Mm.
Because he said that something had been talked about, and that he was not high enough in the hierarchy of the Austrian team to actually have been informed about it, which is why he was still trying really hard to actually make stuff happen and got a yellow card at one point and stuff. So he was the one going for the goal. Everyone else was not so much, especially in the last 20 minutes, which were kind of boring to watch.
The last 20 minutes, I mean, if you're looking for something for an app to watch before you need an afternoon snooze or an afternoon nap, I would put those 20 minutes on.
Definitely.
There was a lot of sort of centre-back sort of walks it out a little bit, plays it back into the centre midfield, and then kind of gets it back, and there's like a little half-hearted kind of press from the other team.
Yeah, the fun that I got out of it was that I knew that the German commentator at one point advised everyone to stop watching the game and just do something else. And so I was kind of, because we watched it in the original, like in the Spanish commentary. So I always tried to figure out which moment it actually was that he said, guys, this is enough.
Yeah.
I've had enough. Go do something else because this is not worth your time.
But I feel
but there were plenty of moments that actually could have been this. So,
but I feel like the Spanish commentator that we watched on, he got very annoyed. I feel like he got a bit annoyed a bit too early, So that once he was quite annoyed at the kind of like 55 minute, I think at 55 or something like that, he says like, this is not sport, and you know, this is a phenomenal disgrace. But once you've gone that high as a pitch sort of early on, once, you know, if he'd known what was to come, maybe he would have saved himself a little better for when it did get really, really, really disgraceful.
I feel like it started with the crowd, which got angry way too early, like at least from my perspective. And then the commentators took up on it. And so eventually at the end, everyone was just pissed off, I think. And I mean, at this point, maybe one has to start with a defense maybe of both teams, because I feel like the stakes were extremely high and both of these teams knew that with this score 1-0 for West Germany, both of them would, you know, go on to continue the tournament. And of course that's a lot of incentive that incentivizes play, that keeps it safe where nothing happens. And if you know, and if you can read like your opponent, or maybe had a little chat during halftime, is it that wrong? Like, would teams actually do it differently nowadays? Or was it just more of the circumstances of Germany and Austria actually knowing that this would be the score that would get them, you know, to the next round? That was the evil of this.
I feel like there's so much about it is that, like, the actors who are involved, right? It's Germany and Austria.
Yeah.
It's, like, how it kind of falls into the kind of stereotype of German sports people, the kind of, you know, the ends always justify the means, a little bit about the kind of arrogant stuff about them earlier in the tournament with Algeria, that it's those two teams, and also that the team that they're fucking over is Algeria.
No, I definitely think, and that's why we talked about it earlier, the context matters here, and that is that's like a lot of people rooted for Algeria. And of course that matters, and I do understand that people get frustrated and stuff, but I just from the perspective of both teams, I don't know whether it was kind of a reasonable thing to do, whether it was the right thing to do. I mean,
also very much also about the kind of like stereotype of sport back then, you know, how like people wanted it to be kind of a little bit more pure, you know, winning is eventually kind of what always matters, right? Whereas with this, you know, with the German commentator was talking about, I don't care about that we're going through, this is disgraceful kind of thing.
Yeah, and you even see it in the little things, like in the little things during the match, where people get fouled and they think that it was actually a foul, but the match continues and they don't complain all the time. And they don't, you know, play for time a lot and stuff. So yeah, maybe the idea of sport as something pure and something that you have to fight out... Was a different one back then. Yeah, that might be.
But yeah, and I do it, like, we're going to circle back to this, but also whenever I sort of read about this game or read, you know, people write about this game, I feel like the myth is always bigger than actually what it actually kind of exists, you know? Like in your head you imagine them playing it around the center circle, or you back pass to the goalkeeper who throws it out, then you pass it back to him and stuff. But
you mean just the headlines that you could read afterwards, like the worst World Cup match, a lifeless win, leaving the rest of the world with impotent frustration, the disgrace of Gijón and the non-aggression pact. I mean, all of this, you know, suggests that it was the worst match and the meanest thing to ever have been done in football history. And watching this match, I don't feel this strongly about it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
We should also point out that the sort of Austrian delegation or the sort of defenders of the team didn't exactly cover themselves in glory or were particularly most animus.
I feel like that's the larger context again. Yeah. Which is just, of course, I completely feel the people that get agitated because the Germans and the Austrians were kind of very cocky and very exclusionary towards the Algerians and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know, do you have the English translation of it? Because it is pretty bad what the Austrian, the head of the Austrian delegation says after the match.
Yeah, I have it here. So,
okay.
Naturally, today's game was played tactically. Starts off reasonably enough. But he carries on with them. But if 10,000 sons of the desert here in the stadium want to trigger a scandal because of this, it just goes to show that they have too few schools. Some sheik comes out of an oasis, is allowed to get a sniff of World Cup air after 300 years, and thinks he's entitled to open his gob.
Which is just like blatantly racist.
I mean, it's
just like using as much derogative terms like that you can use to make a point.
There's certain like rhetorical kind of flourish with the sons of the desert and coming out of the oasis.
Yeah, no, I mean, they think that they don't have enough schools, which is kind of an argument I don't even follow. Like, I don't know why, how it makes sense.
Mm.
That they get agitated does mean that they don't have enough schools? Because why? I don't even know. But yeah, it shows kind of the antipathy they had towards Algeria and the team. And which then of course clashes with the momentum that the Algerian team builds with the spectators in Spain, because they actually played lovely football. They were the underdogs, played there for the first time. I mean, this is all would be what we've said before, for the first time at the World Cup. So yeah, this clashes, and this all then culminates in the frustration that you can hear from the audience during the match.
Mm. After the game, and after this, there's a lot of outrage from lots of different parties. Algeria lodged an appeal about for match fixing for this game, but after a 3.5-hour meeting, FIFA decided that they couldn't change the result.
Quick fact, the vice president of the FIFA committee was actually the head of the German Football Union. So he might have had a say in this.
There's a little bit of a conflict of interest there, but I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure of the details.
I mean, FIFA is a very serious and upright institution, so...
Mm. But I should also, you know, read this quote from the right back of Algeria at the time, Shabane Merzikane, who said... we weren't angry, we were cool. To see two big powers debasing themselves in order to eliminate us was a tribute to Algeria. They progressed with this honour. We went out with our heads held high.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know whether it's him, but I think he goes on to say that even the official FIFA World Cup rules have been changed.
Yeah.
Mainly because of this match. Right?
Yeah, mainly because of this match that the last group stage games were... to be played at the same
simultaneously.
Time. Which was probably a lesson they should have learned from the previous World Cup, where Argentina were needed to beat Peru by four clear goals to progress from the group stage. And with the Argentinian junta allegedly playing a little bit of a role in Peru's sort of collapse to a 6-0 Nick 6-0 defeat.
Might be a good match to cover as well.
Yeah.
One time.
So
one day.
At some point that might come up again in our in our future catalogues. But it's been a pleasure, Leon.
It was so nice. No, I mean the last words, I don't know where I read this, but in one article that it's not just what you do, but the way you do it, and I think this sums it up pretty nicely. So it's not just that they might have colluded, but it was also the context and how they talked about
and
how they presented themselves and how it appeared that actually made this the disgrace of Gijón.
Disgrace. What is it? Actually, what is it in German? Maybe you should... do you have the German name?
Schande von Gijón.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is just the literal translation of it. Yeah. Or the Nicht-Angriffspakt von Gijón. Or the Anschluss, which is a reference to the annexation of Austria by Germany in 1938.
Yeah.
So lots of politics in this one.
Lots of politics stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and join us next time.
Social Podcast Network.